Hello, and welcome to Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated podcast for all things comic, manga, and graphic illustrated media related. And this week I'm joined by Rob.
Hello.
Or Uncle Poocake, as we like to call him.
The footballing
and
Uncle
Andrew,
Poocake.
The sage of all comics.
Hello.
So, what are we talking about today, Andrew?
Okay, so it's near enough the end of the year, give or take a month, but who cares about December? Literally no one, right?
Well, everybody spends most of it in the pub anyway.
Exactly. So I figure we're looking at the new year. Why not look at the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Okay.
Which will be happening in a new year. So, yeah, we are at, which I think possibly kind of a more interesting point than we've been at before with the MCU, in that don't really know that much about what's coming.
I think we are. I think one of the reasons why we don't know much about what's coming is because they had this plan of action where they included Guardians of the Galaxy as part of it. And Guardians 3 was probably going to introduce Adam Warlock as a character for Avengers 4.
Yeah, in fact, I think James Gunn has said in interviews that like Guardians 3 was supposed to be the thing that like properly kicked off the next phase of Marvel movies.
Yeah. But with Guardians 3 not happening now and Disney removing it from its slate for 2020.
I don't know if it's officially like not happening, but I think it's maybe like on hold.
Yeah, I think it's that development hell on hold where we won't see sight nor sound of it for the next couple of years until we have a new president.
And then it'll be re-released as Guardians of the Galaxy 3, The New Mutants.
No, I think they'll just, I think they'll probably just rehire James Gunn on the quiet and then just basically say, yeah, just finish it off, you know?
I'm not entirely sure it's possible to rehire James Gunn on the quiet. I don't think that would happen.
I think
it would happen very noisily.
No, it's fine. It's what they do is they hire hotshot new director, Jim Cannon.
That's nice. No, that's where I was going to say. Hotshot new director. They've changed his name. And leave it to the Disney Imagineers, right? Imagination Engineers, whatever you want to call them. Trust Disney to mash those words together. Leave it to them to basically do all their makeup and all the age technology and everything and make him look like a teenager.
Wait, is that, you realize what you're pitching is The Crossing, where Iron Man went evil and they had to get Teen Tony from like the 90s.
Yep, I know. It works
and
as well.
God, this will work just as well as that did. So anyway, MCU, all we've really got confirmed at the moment is March the 8th of 2019, we are getting Captain Marvel.
Yep.
Followed by Avengers 4 on May the 3rd, and then Spider-Man Far From Home on July 5th. But I think what's more interesting is we also have 8 release dates, which don't yet have a movie attached to them. So what we have at the moment is May the 1st, 2020, November the 6th of that year, February the 12th of 2021, May the 7th and November the 5th of then, and then into 2022, we've got February the 18th, May the 6th, and July the 29th.
Yeah, one of the characters that probably that we already discussed is probably going to get a movie is Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel. But
yeah, I could see that happening. Like maybe, see, I don't know, it's even... So, 2022, a bit too early for that.
I think it might be a bit too early, but the character who I'm kind of disappointed that we probably won't see because Guardians 3 isn't happening is Nova.
Yeah, see, but then when we say that it could just be that they'll say, okay, we're not going to have Guardians, we'll just like make a Nova movie instead.
Well, I mean, they could make a Nova movie because they did make a reference in... Infinity War to the fact that the Nova Corps was destroyed.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got a setup for like Robbie Ryder to... It is Robbie Ryder, isn't it? Nova.
It's Richard Ryder, isn't it?
Richard. That's right. Robbie Ryder is his evil brother.
Darkhawk.
No. Dark Starhawk, Rob. Get it right.
Oh, God. Yeah, sorry.
If I have to read that incredibly convoluted series, I'm damn well going to call you out every time you make a mistake on it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible that the reason those release dates are in, but not attached to anything, is that they're just simply waiting to see what they've actually got when the dust settles on the Fox deal.
Possibly.
No, I think it's still going to be quite a few years before we actually see some Marvel Fox stuff, because there's like lots of behind-the-scenes stuff that they kind of need to get wrangled out. I would assume it's more of a, they're waiting until after Avengers 4.
Yeah. Do you know who I'd be interested in seeing, aside from Nova, is Spider-Woman?
I would definitely be up for a Spider-Woman film. That's another thing. Could get a Spider-Woman TV series.
See, Spider-Woman TV series works for me.
Yeah, especially kind of through this new Disney streaming service where it looks like the TV shows are going to be a lot closer tied to the movies.
That works for me totally, because there's nothing stopping you having cameos from say, the likes of Tom Holland as Spider-Man appearing in the odd Spider-Woman episode here and there. If you got that,
I would love that. It would be like when Samuel L. Jackson showed up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but on like a way bigger scale.
Yeah. And if you introduce Spider-Woman, it also gives you license to introduce Silk as well.
Yeah. Although, technically, they already have.
Have they?
Yeah. Apparently, Cindy Moon is one of Spider-Man's classmates in Homecoming.
Is she?
Yep. Apparently so.
I did not know that.
That's a fun bit of trivia for you.
Do you think they'll ever do a Wonder Man movie?
No.
You seem very sure on that, Andrew. It's like you've taken out some kind of litigation to make sure it never happens.
I mean, I don't even need to point me to like one person clamoring for a Wonder Man movie.
Yeah, it's true. There's like one person and his name is Steve.
And he's the man who wrote Wonder Man.
He prefers to go by the name Chad.
Of course he does. God, I bet he even wears, like, the Wonder Man outfit of just black tank top and awkward mullet.
Yeah, it's Steve from Wiltshire, by the way.
Wow. That is minimalist in terms of costume imagination, isn't it?
Yes.
What could Wonder Man possibly wear?
Hey, in his defence, well, 2 points in his defence, at least he has a giant W on his tank top. And two, every outfit he's worn that hasn't been that has been awful.
Can I just point out,
except for his rad safari jacket, he should just wear that.
Yeah. Can I just point out that if you're talking about minimalist costumes, you can't get more minimalist than Namor's original costume.
I didn't mean minimalist in terms of the amount of cloth. I meant minimalist in terms of how many minutes in the design department did it take to come up with.
Oh, probably about 3 minutes.
That long?
Yeah.
I suppose they probably had to make a cup of tea, didn't they?
Well, when you get right down to it, 3 minutes is a long time for a Marvel costume idea.
So I really like the idea that there's just like a room full of people staring at a man in a black tank top going,
what can we do to make this Wonder Man?
Yeah, it's good, but it's missing something. Damn it, we've been at this for 5 hours. What is it?
Oh,
and then just
God.
Like Jordan Peele bursts in, pulls out a red marker and just scribbles a W on it.
Do you know, I've just realised, you know, because you said a black tank top. You remember, have you seen One Punch Man yet, Andrew?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw One Punch Man ages ago.
You remember the tank top group? Tank top boy and tank top master and...
And tank top tiger.
Yes. It's all Wonder Man, isn't it?
Actually, yes. That's a manga and anime fans. If you're not familiar with Wonder Man, he's a less cool version of the Tank Top Brothers. That's how bad he is.
He is.
He's got to admit, though, he has got a certain consistency in design.
He does like his big W.
Why did you say it like that?
I mean, I'm saying the fact. Man loves a big old W. There's a slap it right across his chest.
I think that's a record, Andrew. I think we've broken Rob early.
I think it's about breaking him early and breaking him with the most innocuous phase I've ever broken him with.
Yeah, it's a double whammy.
Is that what the W stands for?
I like the idea that any bad guys that Wonder Man takes out, just their last words are, what?
No, don't be silly, Mick. Wonder Man doesn't take out baddies. What happens is he tries to fight them and then they kill him.
Can you imagine, though, if...
That sounds like the worst comic book ever.
Yeah. Can you imagine, though, if the W actually did stand for Whammy and he wanted to call himself Whammy Man? beginning.
What I've noticed is that there's a DC version of Wonder Man as well that wears a remarkably similar costume.
Yes, there is. Being serious, though, you know that She-Hulk they did recently where they took She-Hulk and just made her the Hulk? I think that being...
the comic series.
Yeah, the comic series.
It was by this TV series I hadn't heard of.
No. The comic book series where she was where she suffered from PTSD and that. I think that was an interesting take on She-Hulk. I'd love for them to do a She-Hulk movie that actually does justice to the character and isn't simply another kind of, oh, look, it's She-Hulk, let's just, you know, she's basically
the big W slapped across someone's chest.
Basically, yeah, of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Yeah. But again, I think I'd prefer to see a She-Hulk TV series, because I think maybe like She-Hulk legal drama, which is actually got to deal with cases.
That works for me. That actually works for me.
Yeah, so with Jessica Drew, like, actually let her do some sleuthing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you did She-Hulk as a TV series, you could have her in Jessica Jones, because they do they have worked together on occasion.
You could, but I guess it's maybe going to be a rights thing.
Yeah.
Because Marvel probably don't want to give any of their characters to Netflix.
It's only a matter of time before they get the rights back.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sure Jessica Jones will be back in the MCU, or like the main MCU at some point.
Yeah, and I don't think Netflix are going to step on Disney's toes when it comes to storylines. I think Netflix will probably try and keep it as close to the MCU as possible, because they know that... if they do it the way DC have done it, where the TV shows are separate from the movies, then, you know, they risk their future profits. But if they keep it as close to the MCU as possible, then, you know, it's got that tie-in value.
Here's a question, though. Is She-Hulk not affected by the same rights issues as Hulk is?
Oh, that is a good point, yeah. I think she's maybe technically owned by Universal.
Well, that's got us that idea.
Sorry.
Hang on. So, Hulk, the reason why we can't have a Hulk movie is because Universal won't do it.
Well, then again, because I don't think Universal actually own the rights to Hulk as a... Yeah, no, I think they just own the rights to a solo Hulk movie.
That's right, which is why he can appear in the Avengers. But yeah. I think they sort of did a sort of mini-universe with quite a lot of the characters when they sold off the rights, didn't they? So they sold packages... So, like, all the Spider-Verse characters went to Sony.
Hmm.
All the Hulk universe characters went to Universal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like maybe Universal must have given at least some of the rights back, which is why Hulk appears in the MCU.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I think a She-Hulk TV series or movie is a possibility.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Anyway, shall I go through... things that are confirmed or kind of might probably come out at some point.
Yes.
Yes.
So, quick side marathon from that. Starting at the May the 1st, 2020 release date. I'm going to say we could maybe scratch that one off, because I would assume that was when Guardians 3 was supposed to come out.
I think so, yeah.
But then November 6th, I'm thinking that might be Black Panther 2, which is like pretty much confirmed.
Yeah. Isn't it? Is that the one that ties in with Avengers 4 then, or is that kind of post-Avengers 4?
I think that would be post-Avengers 4.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be, because that would be like over a year later. Because this is November 6th, 2020 we're talking about.
Ah, right, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, then some of the other things that are just floating about. Potentially a Doctor Strange 2, which I think at the moment is just a thing we're probably going to work on at some point. So, who knows, that'll probably happen. Captain Marvel 2, I assume, assuming that first movie does well, which it will, because it's a Marvel movie. Then the interesting ones that are in development. Might finally be getting that Black Widow solo movie.
Ooh. Yay!
Heck yeah. On some Natasha Romanoff, like, crazy high-tech spy action.
Absolutely.
Is this on the back of that Red Sparrow doing pretty decent?
I think it's that, and just the fact that for years, fans have been clamouring for a Black Widow movie.
Well, we've had two movies in the last couple of years that have kind of proven a Black Widow movie would go down quite well.
Yeah, I think both Atomic Blonde and Red Sparrow have sort of paved the way.
Yeah, and...
Actually, yeah, that might be it as well, because I remember for a while there was this dumb kind of sensibility in Hollywood that female action movies don't work.
I'm sorry, they do. The Long Kiss Goodnight is still a favourite of mine.
No, but see, Rob, Ultraviolet and Underworld both bombed, so it must be that people don't like female-led action movies. That's the only takeaway from that. Not that maybe they don't like movies that are objectively the worst.
Yeah, they're not... I mean, Ultraviolet wasn't a great movie in the first place. And I've forgotten what the other one you said was.
But Underworld, I think, was like the other... Underworld did as well as they hoped.
Well, I think Underworld, the first one, did all right.
Yeah.
It was the
endless and pointless sequels that they did.
Yeah, I mean...
Which, again, it's definitely not that ideas shouldn't be run into the ground until there's nothing left of them. Definitely the fact that there's a woman is what killed that movie franchise.
I mean, they kept Halloween going for how many movies? Even though most of them after the third one were basically not even worth the film they were on.
That's true. So anyway, Black Widow. And then the real left field choice that I guess is still probably going to happen, Eternals.
Really? Now, if you were on a podcast, Andrew, with someone who perhaps accidentally hadn't ever read any Eternals, how would you describe them?
I mean, first of all, I think not knowing who the Eternals are is not something to be ashamed of.
It's true.
Okay.
But they are basically a Jack Kirby property from the 1960s, which originally wasn't even supposed to be part of the MCU. But it's basically the idea that is the Celestials made a group of superhumans kind of millions of years ago, and they've just existed throughout history, kind of often getting mistaken for gods in other mythical figures, except not like the actual gods and mythical figures that exist in the MCU, the Marvel Universe.
Okay. So these are other gods?
Yeah.
Right.
Except they're not gods.
Right.
They're just very advanced humans.
Okay.
Well, then also some of them went off into space and landed on the moon Titan, and that's where Thanos comes from. So I guess that makes more sense. In that they're technically tied to Thanos, so maybe that's what you can work off to make something of these characters. But they're basically something that were forgotten about for many, many years. Then I think Neil Gaiman tried to bring them back in, like, I guess the mid-2000s.
I think it was about the
most people said, nah, actually, you're all right.
Yeah, but was that because the characters were decent or because Neil Gaiman is such a good writer?
I mean, I think it was probably more down to him. I don't think the characters really... much of anything.
My point exactly.
One of them, Cersei, joined the Avengers for a bit.
Yeah, I remember. That was during the 90s. Yeah, actually, Eternals might have actually been from the 90s then, because she did
Eternals were definitely... Actually,
Volume 1 was published in July 1976.
Yeah, I was going to say, going back, I think it was the 70s, because I think it was like Jack Kirby left Marvel at the end of the 60s to go work for DC for a bit.
Yeah.
And then he came back and did the Eternals for Marvel, but it didn't really take off.
Yeah. Because Cersei, when she was with the Avengers, there was some weird stuff going on at some point. And she never really fit as a character with the Avengers as far as I was concerned. I was thinking, because she was one of the characters who was involved in Operation Galactic Storm and... stuff like that, when they went to kill the Supreme Intelligence of the Kree. That's right, you heard it. The Avengers went to kill the Supreme Intelligence of the Kree, an actual living being. They went to kill.
Which, I mean, it isn't like a huge deal now, but yeah. Cersei was basically them saying, hey, so Scarlet Witch is with the West Coast Avengers. What the Avengers needs is basically Scarlet Witch again, but worse.
Yeah, worse Scarlet Witch and, you know, has far fewer morals.
She's just not a nice person, to be honest.
No, she wasn't. I mean, we're talking about the witch who, in the Odyssey, turned Ulysses' crew into pigs.
So, hold on. This is a female character called Circe, is not a very nice person.
Yeah, she's supposed to be the Circe from the Odyssey.
Yeah, that's like one of the things. It is, you know, Circe from the Odyssey was actually Circe the Eternal, but people mistook her for a witch. But then also Circe from the Odyssey did exist as well, maybe, because this is the problem with trying to put the Eternals in the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Right.
I just remember that Hercules didn't really get on with her.
Eternals are weird. But still, what I'm kind of interested in doing. It is maybe doing a bit of a Thor Ragnarok with it.
I've just noticed one of the notes on the Eternal says that the film has a focus on Cersei as the central character.
Oh, please don't.
I mean, they'll probably fix her. But yeah, what I want is for them to like just give this to someone like Taika Waititi and just say, okay, this is the Eternals. Literally no one knows who they are, so just do whatever the hell you want.
You have a blank canvas, Taika, which is the best type of canvas to give him.
Well, no, it's even better than a blank canvas. It's a mostly blank canvas with a bunch of rad Jack Kirby designs all around it.
True. So anyone else, then?
No, I think that is everything we've got kind of hard confirmed at the moment.
No Moon Knight?
No Moon Knight just yet. But one day Moon Knight.
Do you think they'll ever do a Kezar movie?
No.
that was another very definite one.
I mean, that being said,
yeah.
I guess the main thing against Kezar is that he's a little bit problematic, but that's in the same way that Iron Fist is also a little bit problematic.
Well, not only that, Kezar is basically Marvel's Tarzan, isn't he?
Yeah, that's also, he's very obviously a rip-off of Tarzan.
What about Shang-Chi?
Shang-Chi, the master of Kung Fu, who is not the other Kung Fu guy.
Yes.
I don't know, I guess. He punches good.
Well, I mean, they could have made a TV show out of it if Iron Fist worked.
Yeah, I mean, guess do Shang-Chi, but as the Iron Fist show I wanted, which is like a pastiche of old-time Kung Fu movies in the same way that Luke Cage is like a pastiche of blaxploitation movies.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That I would watch.
Yeah. Oh, basically, just look at the... you remember the Kung Fu TV series? Take that, set it in modern-day America.
Ooh. And cast Donnie Yen as Shang-Chi.
Or, you could choose somebody who's slightly younger.
Dory, I would like to point out that man just doesn't age.
This is true. He's indestructible in the same way that Jackie Chan is indestructible, but that's because Jackie Chan, I'm pretty sure by now, is a cyborg.
Oh, but also, I have a second casting choice. Just give me a sec. We are going... Oh, dang!
What?
I was going to say we should reuse the drunken master guy from the first season of Iron Fist. You know the one guy on that show who could actually do Kung Fu and was awesome?
Yeah.
Him. Also, apparently that's Louis Tan, who was a Shatter star in the Deadpool movie as well.
Yeah, actually, he wouldn't have been a bad choice.
Yeah, cast him, because, like, he is rad at Kung Fu, and also came across as being, like, super likeable.
Question. Right, with the X-Men and stuff like that, yeah? They're doing the Dark Phoenix stuff. Do you think they'll ever introduce, say, Alpha Flight?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, Guardians of the Galaxy is a multi-million dollar franchise now.
Yeah.
I think you could do literally any Marvel property at this point and just say, it's a Marvel film. Y'all are going to watch this and give us a bajillion dollars. Everyone come out and watch the Frogman movie. About that guy who dresses up as a frog and has springs on his feet.
Yeah? Oh, I'm going to throw a curveball to you here, Andrew. And right. They've done Thor Ragnarok. They've done Infinity War. Post-Infinity War, imagine Thor is like all-powerful, the High Father now. He's taken Odin's place. He's in charge. He's the man. But he's got to deal with cosmic stuff, but he thinks Earth still needs a hero who's like him.
No. No, Rob. No. Absolutely not. I will accept Frogman, but we will absolutely not have Thunderstrike. Not in my MCU.
All right.
God damn, what if Thor but ponytail and leather jacket? Oh, what if Thor but weird mohawk?
All right, here's a question for you, Andrew, because I want to see where this rates on your reactionometer, which is a device so scientifically accurate I can't even say it. Do you think there's space for another Howard the Duck movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
Like, that is the kind of... I'd genuinely love something like that. Something that does just, like, go all out, just a full-on comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like Howard the Duck to be a bit like his comic book counterpart, where he's actually a detective as well. I'd love Howard the Duck to be in, you know, one of those gritty 1920s detective, those cheesily gritty 1920s detective.
He could team stories. Up with She-Hulk.
No, he could team up with Jessica Jones. Howard the Duck TV series that crosses over with Daredevil and Jessica Jones.
I mean, that's it. There you go, folks. We've done it. The future of the MCU is sorted.
Yes.
And the future is Downey. Yes, that's it. We're going to lose one Downey, so replace it with another.
I like it.
Hello, I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
Hi, it's Dave from Geek Corner. If you really love cosplay and you like to get dressed up as your favourite characters from TV and movies, whatever it is that you like to dress as, get yourselves down to Geek Corner in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall. We actually make cosplay props and costuming props. They're generally made from foam and stuff, so they're perfectly safe to have out in the public. So, come along, say hi.
Hello, and welcome back. And now the bit you've all been waiting for. What stuff have we been reading?
Well, I've been reading, since you didn't want to, because you found the first one kind of boring, I actually kind of enjoyed The Infinity Siblings.
I think you're confusing the word boring with the word pointless.
Pointless, boring, well, no, boring is pointless, isn't it?
No, can have something that's got a point that's still boring.
This is true. Anyway, you covered Thanos, The Infinity Siblings, which was about Thanos and his brother Eros, or Star Fox as he's also known.
A.K.A. the Space Rapist.
Yes. This one, however, is Thanos, The Infinity Conflict, and it's written by Jim Starlin with art by Alan Davis, ink by Mark Farmer, colours by Jim Campbell, and letters by VC's Clayton Cowles. And it starts off with... Right, it starts off in a very odd way, because in the past, you had Thanos facing his old enemy, Hunger. And you had Kang the Conqueror, who was watching from afar as Hunger killed Thanos and triggered a series of events that would send all of existence into a death spiral. So at the beginning of this, right, you have Adam Warlock sitting across from Thanos, and it's the Adam Warlock with the red cape, I should say, and the massive wing collar. And he's sitting across from Thanos, and he's saying, you know, I want you to look after the Reality Stone, they're having this long discussion about why Thanos is the right person to look after the Reality Stone. Now, under normal circumstances, you know, you don't want Thanos to look after any of the Infinity Stones because we've all seen what he does with them. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to question your wisdom there, Adam Warlock.
Yeah, but apparently Adam Warlock senses a greater darkness on the horizon and he wants someone trustworthy to look after the Infinity Stone, and it's a case of better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Anyway, Adam does his usual...
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But if there's a truck coming to hit me, and I can jump out the way, and on the left is like a two-story drop that will break my legs, and on the right is just the pavement, probably jump to the pavement.
Yes. See, you're more right than you realise, and we'll get to that in a second. But anyway... Adam basically does his usual body-swapping thing where he takes over someone else's body and resurrects himself in a kind of gruesome fashion, because apparently that's his thing. So
it's a bit of a weirdo Adam Warlock, isn't he?
Well, Adam Warlock's resurrection, because he can resurrect, right? He's designed to resurrect, and he resurrects through other living beings. So basically he's more like a cosmic parasite than an actual hero.
He's kind of the worst.
Yeah, he is. But anyway, he's with Pip, and they're basically hanging out looking for Halo Jones. Sorry, couldn't resist the reference. But anyway, they end up going to meet Thanos, who's surrounded by his outriders and everything like that. And Thanos basically says the drastic cosmic change is dawning, and such an astral occurrence could not be hidden from one such as yourself. Adam says, have you also sensed the approaching darkness? Thanos basically goes, yes, but it means something different to you than it does to me, because the approaching darkness, and then he kills Adam Warlock and says, is me.
freaking dum-dum, Adam Locke.
Yeah, he's basically given the Infinity Stone to Thanos. And now Thanos has a plan. See, there is this weird, complicated relationship that Thanos has with Adam Warlock, and he knows Adam Warlock very well. He knows Adam Warlock can resurrect in different places, and what he's done is basically set across the universe all of these different devices, so when they detect Warlock's, the energy signature of Warlock resurrecting himself, it fires a homing missile at it and blows him up again. And it takes about 2 weeks for Warlock to resurrect.
I mean, that's cool, but it also seems like a far less elaborate way to beat Adam Warlock. It's just lock him inside a room, and then put a sign on the door that says, pull to open, when actually you push it.
Yeah. The other part of this has to do with Eros, or Star Fox, who, thanks to Isaac, who is the AI on Titan, if I remember rightly, he has reconstructed Kang's time bracelet, and can now use it to travel through time and to offset himself, like, in a slight phase out of time. And he's enjoying it, but he's wondering what Thanos is up to. And so he finds out that Thanos is actually looking for him. And so he kind of makes himself scarce. Adam, during one of his resurrections, gets taken outside the universe by the Living Tribunal. Thanos kills Death and becomes Death. And this is all about how Thanos is becoming everything. And, like, So Thanos is basically doing what he already did in the Infinity Gauntlet by becoming like the universe, because he did this once already when he held the Infinity Gauntlet. He became Eternity.
Yeah, Thanos. He can be Death. He can be Eternity.
Yeah, but
can he be John Mitch?
Possibly, because apparently there is a power above all, the one above all, who is the big good, bad, whatever, even bigger than Eternity and Infinity, who are the representatives of the two infinite aspects of the Marvel Universe, right?
It's the Alpha Malkovich.
The Alpha Malkovich is correct.
The Malkovich.
Dear Lord.
So anyway, the Living Tribunal works for the Malkovich. That's going to stick, by the way. While Thanos is going around killing off every single cosmic entity that he can find and absorbing them. And now Thanos is basically some Death Galactus-looking giant thing that can take on the Living Tribunal and punch his lights out. And he is going to affect not just the Marvel Universe, but the multiverse. In order to combat that, Adam Warlock is given a mission by the Living Tribunal, and it's a mission he doesn't like, but for the greater good, he will become an assassin. But the question is, who does he have to assassinate?
So I would imagine his mission is just the Living Tribunal. God, Adam, can you just not mess this one up, please? For the love of Malkovich.
And, you know, if there ever is a religion of Malkovich, this is where it started.
I mean, at least some good has come out of this series.
So, anyway, moving on. I'll be honest, it's well drawn. It's confusing, though. It's a typical Jim Starlin story. It's the type of thing that it's got a lot of high ideas and a lot of things that you have to sit there and think about how it all fits together without actually giving you any real answers. Maybe the answers will come eventually. You never know.
Maybe the answer is just, don't leave anything to Adam Warlock. He's the worst.
Yeah, but you know, he's kind of Jim Starlin's baby, isn't he?
Then make him better, Jim Starlin.
He might be trying to right now. You never know. Anyway, shall we move on?
We shall indeed. So, I've been having a bit of an X-Men-a-palooza. First up, I've been reading X-Men Uncanny Origins, which is by Dennis Hopeless, with art by Jamie McKelvey. And Mike Norton, colours by Matthew Wilson, and that is by our good friend VC's Clayton Cowles.
Oh, nice.
So, Uncanny Origins is a retelling of, well, the origins of the X-Men, the original five. So you've got, you know, Cyclops, Beast, Angel, Iceman, and Jean Grey.
Okay.
And this series, it starts kind of at Cape Citadel, where the X-Men had their first fight with Magneto. And a lot of that is them fighting Magneto and then flashing back to kind of Jean's first day at the school, where, you know, she rocks up, she meets the X-Men, she sees Scott, he's the strange, moody boy who spends all his time training in the Danger Room. Beast is the fun but weird science guy. Angel is the all handsome and charming one. And Iceman is Justin Bieber.
This is true. It's true. Iceman was Justin Bieber.
In this, Iceman is drawn to look exactly like Justin Bieber.
Is he really?
He is. And it's kind of great. Of course he is.
Please say somebody at one point calls him Bieber Drake.
No, they don't. This takes place in a world where Justin Bieber doesn't exist.
Unless
Bobby Drake is the 616 version of Justin Bieber. I've cracked it. I've cracked the code. But this story, it just details the X-Men's very early adventures, kind of fighting foes like Magneto and Unus the Untouchable and the Blob, but also fighting their biggest foe, Fiends.
They do get in the way of superheroes a lot, don't they?
This is true, but they're nothing more than feelings.
Whoa, feelings?
Yes.
Yeah, I quite like that this is more focused on kind of like the teen drama aspect, because the original five X-Men are boring.
Yes, they are.
They're just a bunch of generic white middle class. Oh, isn't it so bad that we're hated and feared for being mutants, except not really. And I feel like this kind of makes them a lot more interesting by just dealing with the fact that they're basically a bunch of teens who, because of their mutations, have been like thrown together with people who they don't necessarily relate to or even like all that much. But they're going to like form these bonds of friendship. It's basically one of the most underrated movies of recent times, the Power Rangers movie.
It was underrated?
Yes. That is genuinely a really fun movie about like a group of teens kind of coming together and moving past their differences. And also they've got to fight a weird melty gold thing in their melty robots.
Okay. Did you have the large ice blast when you went to see that movie?
No, I watched it on Netflix. I had a bloody good time with it.
Oh, okay.
I'd actually say this is very similar in that it's kind of some pretty fun superhero action-y stuff wrapped around like, hey, look at these teens dealing with their troubles and actually like being more engaging than they are in the original comics. Because there's kind of lots of fun stuff like, they actually do the whole Scott, Jean and Warren love triangle, but in a fun way.
Oh.
And I think a lot of it is also thanks to Jamie McKelvey's art. Because if you've read Young Avengers or Wicked and the Divine, he's very good at drawing teenagers. It's kind of, and it's basically the tiny garbage people they are, but also kind of likable. Like you want them to just figure their stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, I do like his art from Wicked and the Divine.
Yeah, this is just, it's a fun little series that I would highly recommend. And then also in the back, I think this must have come out a little while ago and it's getting reissued. But it also includes the first issue of Kieran Gillen's Uncanny X-Men run from like 2011, which, I mean, is a really good series and you should all check out. It's just, it's a bit of an odd inclusion. Yeah, that's X-Men Uncanny Origins. It's a nice, fun time.
Awesome.
Cool. So it's over to me now, is it?
Oh, also, I want to point out that Magneto would have gotten away for it if it weren't for those meddling kids.
You interrupted me for that.
Psychic professor. Yes. I thought it was worthwhile.
Thoughts are very subjective things. Anyway, I have Buffy the Vampire Slayer, an omnibus of Tales of the Slayer and Tales of Le Vampire. So basically what we've got here is a compilation of 20 short stories, really, written by Joss Whedon, Amber Benson, Jane Espenson, David Fury, Rebecca Sinclair, Doug Petrie, Brett Matthews, Sam Leeb, Drew Goddard, Ben Edlund, Becky Cloonan, Jackie Kessler, and there's a cover gallery at the end. And the art is by... No, if I'd read all the artists out, we'll be here till just after the New Mutants gets released.
Yeah, it's by lots. Also, I do hope in the final recording that the sound has actually picked up just you very loudly turning the page.
Like that?
Yes.
Yeah, like that.
Okay. Rob's wonderful at editing sound. He'll get around that. So, what you've basically got here is a lot of gap filling. These are obviously little short stories that have been used throughout the season 8 and season 9 stories. It's, as you would expect, a mixed bag, but we do get to see some familiar faces. We get to meet up with Buffy and Xander, Dracula and Angel and Spike and Drusilla and Darla. But they're very much in the minority, the stories around those. And what's more interesting is the tales around earlier versions of the Watchers, earlier versions of the Slayer. So there's a Native American Slayer. We get to meet Principal Wood from the series Mother. There's an adventure with Nikki. The first Slayer gets a look in and how she's shunned by the rest of humanity because she's got this part demon element to her.
Yeah.
And it has to be said that although the artwork is, by the very nature of the omnibus, of varying quality, the stories themselves are all pretty solid. There's not really that many weak stories as such. Even the one that looks like it's linked to the sort of Call of Cthulhu universe is a decent prelude into the next story, which takes place in really atmospheric depiction of San Francisco in the 1930s. So it's like a little guided tour through the universe of the Slayer rather than an actual Buffy title.
All right.
Good, like a delicious Buffy smorgasbord.
Like a Buffy buffet, if you will. And yeah, so like I said, there's about 20, 21 tales in there. Bear in mind, I picked this up on Saturday and I'd read it by Monday. It's a nice little, oh, I've got 5 minutes before I do the next thing. I can pick one up and, you know, flip through the 5 or 6 pages that it takes. Yeah, it's a nice little collection.
Awesome. So back to me then. Yes.
Yes.
Back to you.
Right. Now, I have something that was a bit of an oddity.
Have you seen a doctor?
Yeah. In terms of comic books, Squirrel Girl is a bit of a phenomenon at the moment. Loads of people love Squirrel Girl. And Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, is a bit of a phenomenon. Loads of people like Ms. Marvel. So what happens if you get a series that pairs the two of them together, along with Squirrel Girl, Squirrel Girl's friends, Cowboy, what were the other guys called?
Cowboy and Chipmunk Hunk.
Yeah, Cowboy and Chipmunk Hunk. And also, you have, What's-Her-Face Who Punches Stars and People Through Dimensions.
Oh, America Chavez.
And you also have America Chavez, right? So this adventure involves Doreen, Squirrel Girl, Doreen Green. She is a teacher now at this Institute for Technical Excellence, or the Howard Anthony Stark Institute for Technical Excellence, and she's a teacher there. And Kamala is there with her group to see the institute and to learn things. And then AIM suddenly attack. And what she learns is that Squirrel Girl is somehow there. Squirrel Girl learns that Ms. Marvel is there, but neither of them know who the other is. In the middle of all this, one of Kamala's school friends called Ember finds out that she's an inhuman and her powers go a little bit weird because somebody on the internet is giving her advice on what she needs to do. And because she's basically spent most of her life on the internet, she begins to trust them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing to do.
Yeah. Now, Ember's abilities...
Listen to this stranger on the internet when he tells you to never trust strangers on the internet.
Yeah. Ember's abilities involve programming and computer games because she's in a computer science class.
Oh, that's convenient.
And basically what Ember can do is she can recreate items and characters and things from video games. So she's got like... Yeah, I know. It's a typical... it's the typical thing that I'd expect from Marvel Comics of this type. And so Kamala has to get Doreen and Cowboy and Chipmunk Hunk. You know, she needs to get them all together so they can fight against Ember. Problem is that someone else is involved in this, and the person who has been telling Ember how to do everything is somebody we all know well.
Is it not my Uncle Paul?
No, it's not. It's the type of character who will, you know, they are a supervillain. And they will basically make a Donkey Kong of Doom. You remember the original Donkey Kong with the barrels and the ladders and the jumping, yeah?
the Mario and the Gravity.
Yeah, imagine the Donkey Kong of Doom version of that.
Isn't that Grodd?
Possibly.
Oh, no, Dr. Doom. I get it. Name is Doom.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. It's actually... do you want me to tell you who it is?
Is it Manape?
No, it's somebody much worse.
Is it the Mandrill?
No, it's somebody much worse.
Is it too late to do a Jason Todd-style listener phoning?
No, but this character...
Gorilla Man?
This character deserves a Jason Todd-style...
Monkey?
No, he's not a primate.
The Monkey King?
He's not a primate of any sort. Or rather,
Gibbon!
He's not a primate of any sort. Well, he is if you consider humans to be primates. I'm just going to tell you, the person who's been telling Ember how to do all these things is Arcade.
Oh, because Donkey Kong Arcade game. Now I get it.
Yeah.
I'm still none the wiser.
Well, I'll be honest, I'm not really sure what this was all about either. That, you know, there's all sorts in here that could have been solved by having Doreen go to Ember and say, are you okay, love? Do you want to talk about, do you want to get some things off your chest? Come with me, we'll have a chat. Literally, this entire story could have been prevented if that had happened, or if somebody in the school said, Ember, you seem a little down, let's go have a chat.
Which, I mean, oftentimes that seems fair enough, but that is kind of Squirrel Girl's whole thing.
Yeah, and not only that, but if the logical approach was taken in so much of popular media, the entire slasher horror flick genre would not exist.
Yeah, but this is the thing, Squirrel Girl's whole shtick is literally that she notices things that other people don't pick up on. So if somebody was feeling upset, she would notice that and she would try and do something about it.
But yeah, anyway, whatever, the bad video games.
Anyway, it's Marvel Rising Zero, Marvel Rising Alpha and Omega, Marvel Rising Squirrel Girl and Ms. Marvel, and that's twice. So it's written by a group of writers, Devin Grayson, Ryan North and G. Willow Wilson, with art by Marco Fela, George Duarte, Irene Strichelski, Ramon Bach, Roberto De Silva, and covers by Guri Hiro and Helen Chen. Not bad. I have to say, aside from that major gripe that Doreen Green doesn't really behave the way I expect her to, aside from that, it's actually kind of fun. I'll admit, it's not as much fun as certain issues of Squirrel Girl or Ms. Marvel that I've read, but it does have some fun moments. But I get the feeling that this is aimed at a slightly younger reader than me. I think it's aimed mainly at a teenage audience.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen, because I think there's like a Marvel Rising TV show and associated merchandise. Seems very kind of young teen oriented.
Yeah, I get the
which
feeling.
Which is fine.
Yeah, thing is, like I said, it's easy to read. It's got charm about it. They picked two great characters to actually have as kind of the ambassadors of the series, Squirrel Girl and Ms. Marvel. Two great characters in their own right, and it's worth a look if you are if you are a fan.
Okay, cool beans. Back to me?
Yes.
Okay, I have been reading X-Men Red, Volume 1, The Hate Machine, which is written by Tom Taylor, with art by Mahmoud Azra, colours by Ives Frosina and Rain Barredo, and that's for X-Men Red issues 1 to 5. And then there's also the X-Men Annual, which is again written by Tom Taylor, with art by Pascal Alex, colours by Chris Sotomayor, and both those have letters by VC's Corey Petit, not Clayton Cowles, and the cover is by Travis Charest. So, X-Men Red, and I'm probably just going to not really talk about the annual, because it's basically just Jean Grey is alive again, she faffs about for a little bit, the art is bad, but the series itself follows Jean basically deciding... she's been dead for years and come back, and it's still to a world where, mutants are hated and feared. So she wants to put a stop to that once and for all, and basically decides she's going to, go global, kind of start liaising with other countries, specifically kind of Wakanda and Atlantis.
Yeah.
Because, Black Panther and Namor are both ex-buddies.
Yep.
And she is going to, start trying to make some real inroads with the UN to get mutants, finally the rights they deserve. It does not go well, and the British ambassador's head explodes when she tries to talk to her.
Ouch.
Nice.
Yep. Meaning that Jean and her X-Men team have to go on the run. Gotta try to uncover what's going on in a conspiracy involving Cassandra Nova and sentinels that take over people's brains, and joining Jean on her quite large X-Men team, to be honest, everyone's favourite X-Men, Nightcrawler, the Laura Kinney version of Wolverine, Gabby as well, because, you know, this is by Tom Taylor, who did All New Wolverine.
Okay.
We've got Namor on the team. Matt's had to remember just like how many people on Namor. Gentle, who is like a Wakandan dude who's basically like as strong as the Hulk, but every time he bolts up, it causes him like huge amounts of pain. And a new character called Trinary. She does hacking.
Oh, God. And they called her Trinary?
Yep, Trinary.
Yeah, because sometimes binary is not enough.
Yep. It's like she's beyond binary, Mick. That's how deep in the Matrix she is. She can see the two.
She's aware of where the spoon is. She knows what happened to all the lost cutlery.
She knows which side the bread's buttered, which is a phrase I never understood.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a fairly easy thing to work out.
Yeah.
X-Men Red, it's just, I'm not a fan.
Okay.
I mean, I think from a storytelling perspective, it's kind of an interesting story, you know, this big kind of global conspiracy with Cassandra Nova sort of taking over world leaders, but also it's so slow. Like, I mean, these five issues, they basically just spend a lot of time setting up what the general premise of the series is and assembling Jean's, like, ridiculously huge team. Because also partway through the series, Storm and Gambit join as well. So it's like, literally, issue five pretty much ends with the full team is finally together. We better do something about this bad guy that's doing the bad stuff. Like, that's too much setup.
So they waited until the end of the fifth issue before they all got together to take on the bad guy.
Yeah, all of these five issues is kind of them assembling, because the start off with the team is pretty much just like Jean, Nightcrawler, Wolverine and Gabby, and then like they go rescue Trinary, then they team up with Black Panther and also Namor, and then kind of fully go off with Namor, and then Storm gets brainwashed and attacks them, but then they break that and she joins, and then Gambit joins. And it just, it feels like the series is just getting started by the time this volume ends.
Oh, and what is that, the second or third volume?
Oh, this is the first volume.
The first volume?
Yeah, but it's still, I feel like five issues is still too long to just get the ball rolling.
Yeah, this is true.
And also what I really don't like is it's sort of a very ham-fisted attempt at working real-world politics in. Because the main conceit of the series is that Cassandra Nova using these brainwashing techniques, it's about, you know, all these people, they're hating mutants.
Yeah.
Because they're being lied to and manipulated, almost like it's fake news if you get it. And I feel like it's an awkward mishmash of this is a real issue that is affecting like actual minorities in the world. But also, what if tiny robots were going in people's brains and making them hate people, and it's sort of you're trying to make like an actual point and have like your big action-packed superhero adventure at the same time, and it's a bit trying to have your cake and eat it too.
Okay.
Also, I feel like these things, it's a prime example of why you need to be careful if you're using the X-Men as like a direct metaphor for, like in this case, immigrants, because yeah, in the real world, most people's hatred of immigrants is like completely unfounded and based on ignorance.
Yeah.
But also people maybe have good reason to be afraid of mutants.
What with them being all that powerful and that?
Yeah, I mean, the series literally starts with Jean rescuing a baby that's been kidnapped and its mutation. But it hasn't been. It's in a car and like two people steal the car and don't realize the baby's in the back. And so the baby gets scared and its power kicks in. And turns out it's basically like a Black Bolt, so that it can, you know, like level city blocks with its screaming. And that's, you know, that's a prime example of the problem with X-Men. That's a baby that's like a weapon of mass destruction.
Ouch.
It could wipe out the entire, like, all of New York without any conception of what it's doing. It's kind of hard to see that and go, yeah, people should just be chill about mutants. The X-Men will sort it.
Yeah.
You know.
It'll all be all right.
Yeah. Unless the X-Men have been controlled by Mesmero or possessed by the Phoenix or turned into a Horseman of Death. But that only happens, like, you know, every other Wednesday.
This is true.
But next, there are also some really good bits in this. Like, there's an amazing bit where basically Cassandra Nova manipulates the Polish government into being super anti-mutant. And, like, the army are kind of chasing a bunch of mutants. They're trying to flee the country. And they kind of corner them on a beach. And sort of, you know, raising their assault rifles when the X-Men kind of fly down and, like, oh, no, stop this. Only for, like, the general of the Polish army to be like, what the hell do you think you're doing, X-Men? You're invading our country. Only for Namor to, like, emerge from the sea and be like, actually, I think you'll find you're all on my turf.
It's true.
Also, it's got Gabby in it, and Gabby is, as always, absolutely delightful.
Yes, she is. Absolutely.
Like, trying to be Haxa Sentinel and kind of adds it to the team. Gabby just draws a big old rainbow on it.
Okay.
I should point out that Gabby is like 10 years old. She's that like a 10-year-old Wolverine.
That makes more sense now.
Just has a pet Wolverine called Jonathan. He has a tiny mask.
Okay.
Mick, over to you.
Is it me now?
Yes.
So, having already sampled the work of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, my next comic is called Of Dust and Blood. Do you see what I've done there?
Because it's the vampires and they like the blood with the sucking and the... And then you stab them and they turn to dust.
Yeah. So this has absolutely got nothing to do with vampires.
Well, it was good while it lasted.
It was. This is Of Dust and Blood, The Battle at Little Bighorn by Val Myrick and Jim Berry. And it's basically, Rob, what you gave me here was history homework.
Okay.
And there will now be a test.
So what's happened is that Jim Berry has gone to numerous sources to try and sort of come together with a less colonist-centric telling of the Battle of Little Bighorn. And it is beautifully illustrated. It really is. Each panel is like a proper sort of watercolour of the action. But the thing is, it did feel like reading homework. It felt like someone had said, can you just have a look at my history essay? And the other thing is, it's not my history. So I really wasn't that interested. And I'm sure it's a very unique telling of the story of the Battle of Little Bighorn. And it's full of blood and guts and gore and tomahawk wielding and bows and arrows and people falling off horses and smearing wood over their faces. And the actual action at the battle is really exciting. But I still felt like I was going to get marks out of 10 at the end of reading it. So
basically it's like an illustrated text.
Yeah, pretty much. Which I think is great if, you know, you're trying to get kids interested in history. I think it's great if they're studying that particular era. But for me, it's not a subject that particularly enthralls me. But I can appreciate that this is a really beautiful way to approach that story, and it took me less time to to read it than your average Western. So it's only sort of 44 pages.
Yeah.
And then there's the usual ubiquitous sort of comic book equivalent to a DVD extra where you get to see some of the preliminary sketches, and even the preliminary sketches are gorgeous. And there's some post-battle historical information as well. But like I say, you know, if you're into your American, Native American battle history, it's a great little read. But if you're not, it's not. Sorry.
If you're not, just go watch The Ballad of Buster Scruggs instead.
Well, a colleague of mine has told me that he's watched that and didn't really get it.
Yeah, but it's a Coen Brothers film, isn't it?
That's what I said.
You don't watch Coen Brothers films to get them.
That's what I said. But then this is also a colleague who was disappointed when there was no superhero action in Birdman.
There was superhero action in Birdman.
Not really.
It was, well,
he was basically expecting someone like Batman, but a bird. And that's what he thought Birdman was.
And he literally got Batman, but a bird.
Yeah, exactly. And if he's disappointed with that, sit them down to watch Condor Man and then ask them what do they prefer, Birdman or Condor Man?
Well, obviously they're going to prefer Condor Man because it's a classic.
No, it isn't.
I mean, granted, it didn't get the Oscar recognition that it should have done.
It didn't even get the classic recognition.
I'm biased because I sat in the Condor car in Dewsbury.
I mean, to be honest, if they'll give an Oscar to Crash, who even cares?
This is true.
Oscars are literally meaningless.
But no, he was literally expecting it to be like a Marvel Cinematic Universe superhero movie, and then said it was terrible when he got in after watching it at the weekend.
I mean, maybe someone should have watched a trailer for it first, then.
Yes.
You'd think.
If you want to catch up with anything that we do on the Geek Show Podcast Network, head over to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find reviews and various other things. You'll also find our shop and our Patreon if you want to show your support. We've got a YouTube channel as well, which also has like various interviews we've done and video game reviews, so check those out if you want. Until next time, which is next week our last show of the year, or is it the week after?
I think next week will be our last show of 2018.
Okay, so until next week, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.